Another one will pay it back.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, good morning. I'm Steve Chiatakis. Bank of America has reached a deal to pay back the $45 billion in bailout money, the first of the banks to repay the cash from the federal government. Marketplace's Amy Scott joins us live from New York this morning. Good morning, Amy.
Good morning.
So what are the terms?
Well, I should say that it's the first of the banks that received, quote, exceptional assistance that's paying back the money. And it plans to pay it partly with cash and also to raise more than $18 billion in new capital by selling securities that, assuming it gets permission from shareholders, can later be converted into stock.
And Bank of America is hunting for a new CEO. Is that going to help?
That's what analysts are saying. Ken Lewis is planning to retire at the end of this month. And, of course, the bank has been subject to restrictions by Paysar Kenneth Feinberg. So, as a Bank of America spokesman put it, this removes the stigma.
And Bank of America was one of the most troubled banks, right? I mean, what does it say about the state of banking right now?
Well, banks like Wells Fargo and Citigroup have yet to pay back their bailout money. And, of course, banks are still facing heavy losses on loans. Alistair Milne teaches banking and finance at Cass Business School in London. And he says we're not out of the woods yet.
Many banks are going to be in a weak position to do a lot more lending. So I think we're going to see something of a shortage of credit for some years to come.
Bank of America lost more than $2 billion last quarter. So while the Treasury Department apparently believes the bank is healthy enough to pay back the taxpayer money, of course, it still faces a lot of challenges.
All right. Marketplace's Amy Scott with us from New York. Amy, thanks.
You're welcome.
Let's check numbers. Shares are higher in Europe right now, mostly under 1%. Asian shares were up today. The Nikkei up almost 4% thanks to a weakening yen and some good U.S. economic news. Hong Kong added more than 1%. Here at home, markets went in different directions. Yesterday, the S&P and NASDAQ were up. The Dow lost a little ground, off about 18 points to close at 10,452. Online shopping is up this year, anywhere from 5 to 10%. So it seems like it would be an easy thing to get into. But small startups say it's anything but. From the Marketplace Entrepreneurship Desk at Oregon Public Broadcasting, here's Mitchell Hartman.
Allison Dorst launched pinksandgreens.com, an online women's golf store, back in May. It was the dark days of spring.
There's definitely a hesitation of the economy and being in the golf retail industry, which is luxury goods.
So far, though, sales have been strong, and she expects to make a profit next year. But the marketing is expensive. Dorst spends thousands a month to make sure her business comes up in web searches. Riva Lozansky writes the blog smallbizdaily.com.
The hardest part right now about being a new startup online retailer is cutting through the clutter. There's so much competition, so how are you going to let people know you exist?
Social networks are a good start. Dorst has 1,400 people on her company's Facebook page.
It's great because the women can banter back and forth about what's a good club, what's a good shoe.
But she needs men, too, to buy golf gifts for their wives.
Because it's been all women buying stuff for themselves.
Teaching men to shop for women online. There's a marketing challenge for the 21st century. I'm Mitchell Hartman for Marketplace.
Marketplace Morning Report is supported by Bank of America, which has begun a 10-year, $1.5 trillion investment in low to moderate income communities, and is distributed by American Public Media. For information about underwriting this or other APM programs such as Marketplace Money, visit AmericanPublicMedia.org.
Protesters today are commemorating one of the worst industrial disasters ever to take place. 25 years ago today, a gas leak at the Union Carbide plant in Bhopal, India, killed thousands of people. Those paying tribute say the effects are still being felt, that the area still hasn't fully been contaminated and compensation's been lacking. Let's speak with Mehul Srivastava, a reporter at Businessweek based in Delhi. Hi, Mehul.
Hello.
What exactly happened?
Well, in December 1984, sometime around midnight, a Union Carbide plant released about 40 metric tons of this chemical called methyl isocyanate. It's poisonous. By the morning, about 4,000 people were dead. In the 15, 20 years after that, another 20 or 30,000 people have died. It's not exactly clear what the estimates are. And the government says about 500,000 survivors are affected. The problem, of course, is that it's not quite clear what caused the leak. Union Carbide said it was a disgruntled employee. The Indian government said it was slack safety standards.
And many protesters, Mehul, say that that gas is still there, that it's still a dangerous area. What's the situation right now?
I mean, almost every environmental group that's ever tested the ground over there says the groundwater, the soil, the buildings, they're all contaminated. So what's resulted is the people who still live in these areas, they still, 25 years down the line, there's children born with birth defects. There's women with reproductive disorders. There's cancers.
So legally, I mean, who's responsible? Is there anything else that can be done?
You've entered the contentious part of the issue here. Dow Chemicals bought out Union Carbide about 9 or 10 years ago, and Union Carbide had paid $470 million in 1989 to the Indian government. As far as Dow Chemicals is concerned, that's that. Everything was settled. But with the amount of people who were killed, that's not a lot of money. And then the government has never actually done a cleanup. The private sector has never done a cleanup. So we have about a quarter of the people in the city of Bhopal in central India who live in an area that's essentially a chemical dump.
And the future, I mean, how do they move on from here?
You know, I've visited Bhopal, and I can tell you that it's a pretty tragic situation. These people are caught between this nexus of government and foreign investment and complicated laws. So it's highly unlikely that 25 years down the line anything's going to change when the 10th year anniversary or the 20th anniversary didn't change anything either.
All right. Mehul Srivastava is a reporter at Businessweek based in Delhi. Mehul, thank you.
Oh, thanks for having me.
And finally, you know how when you're in a concert, they tell you to turn off the cell phone? There's one show next week where the cell phone will be the concert. There's this class at the University of Michigan that's been teaching students how to make iPhones into musical instruments, running fingers across the touchpad or blowing into the microphone, even shaking the phone for different sounds. Well, they're having a concert next week. And if somebody calls, well, all the better. I'm Steve Chiatakis in Los Angeles. This is Marketplace Morning Report.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.